Hello.
Katie,
Hello.
how are you?
Hi. That is a very good line.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go up to the attic because my husband tells me that that's the best place in our house for a good signal.
I think this is the first for a slideshow.
I'm here.
You're there.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We'll just give this thing a countdown.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon, and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow. I know it's not Friday. I know I really need to stop saying it, but none to the point. We have a cracking episode lined up for you. If you want to get in touch at Sideshow on Twitter, Facebook.com/TheSideshow, Sideshow.com. And don't forget, if you are near your iTunes provider or other, you can leave a rate and review there. I rarely ask you, but you know, you can say that Peter's got a face for radio. And let's get on to people far more important and better looking than me. 2018 Chelsea is literally just around the corner. Tickets for all RHS shows are on sale as we speak. And again, at such on Twitter, Facebook.com/TheSideshow. Sideshow.com. You'll find all the show notes for today's show and details of how to buy tickets, etc., up there. Katie Crome is designing a garden with a little bit of a difference, and she is literally on the end of the line. Katie, how are you, my dear?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes.
Katie, a garden with a difference is how I describe it. How different is it?
Well, it's a garden that's having a seizure. We're doing it to raise awareness of epilepsy, because a great friend of mine died a year and a half ago suddenly of a massive seizure, but I'd seen her for lunch about a month before she died, and we were talking about things in life that excite us, and I just love doing Chelsea. And she said, tell you what, I'll give you some money towards a garden at Chelsea as long as you do it on the project that I've been researching and writing on, which was Embroidered Minds, which is all about William Morris's daughter Jenny, who had epilepsy, and it's the story of her life and how they really hid it away in Victorian times. But she died, but we continued doing it, and with her husband's very generous help and some further help from Epilepsy Society and Young Epilepsy, we're actually doing it.
This is slightly unusual, Katie, and I'm going to turn into a bit of a stumbling, bumbling Irish male man here for just a second if I can, because normally, or usually I guess for the greater part, when you hear of somebody designing a garden, they're given a little bit of a brief and they've almost got to become an actor and get themselves into that role, if you will. In your case, before I go any further, I'm really sorry to hear about the passing of your good friend, but to try and keep on track with what I'm supposed to do. How difficult was it, number one, taking that brief on board when I guess you had a better insight than any other designer could have ever had into that brief?
Yeah, well, I actually did start designing it whilst she was in that last sort of month that she was still alive. And so I was talking to her about how it felt to have a seizure. And I mean, there are so many different types of seizures, about over 40, I believe. So I really wanted to put across in the garden what it felt like to have a seizure. And then I started researching what various people's idea of a seizure was from an epileptic's point of view. And I just thought, well, the classic thing is that sort of absence and how that felt. And so then I just started researching and really thinking about, how do you portray that chaotic, perhaps, you know, absence thing in a garden? And so that section is harsh and brown and crispy and spiky and nasty, and it just cuts through the centre of the garden. And I thought, well, just that image alone just says something. And, you know, it almost doesn't matter what you do with the rest of the garden, even though we are telling more of a story than that. But I dropped the whole idea for that first year after she died, and then picked it up again the following year. And then Andrew Thomas, her husband, and I carried on with it from there. But it is difficult, but it makes her memory so much stronger by putting this out there, her story and what she was researching, just working on that, it's wonderful.
There are things that the Sideshow does, and there are people that I have interviewed where I have literally broke my Barney laughing almost the whole way through listening back to it. I guess sometimes we, unknowns to me, contrary to what has been written, I guess, I actually don't do any research. Some of you may suggest or say, in this case, maybe I should. But the question becomes, if I met Katie at a bar, just put the microphone there beside us, this is how the conversation, I guess, would evolve. If it's a subject I know nothing about, and who better to tell me about it? Katie, it was this been a difficult journey for you personally?
No, I don't think it has, actually. I think it, because it really helps you get over something like that. And you just feel, I mean, like, as far as I'm concerned, Leslie's doing it with us as well. She knows what we're doing. And you know, I'm not a religious person, but, you know, she's just, she would be doing the same thing. She'd be joining in and, oh, God, she could laugh and we'd be having a hilarious time about it. But, and you know, her husband and many of her friends as well will be working on this, like the furniture designer that's actually doing our steam bent oak bench. He went to art college with Andrew, Leslie's husband, and so did Sue, who's one of the designers, been working on the tiles that would be on our pathway. And just all the details in the garden are just, I mean, I love all those layers you get, that you can walk past the garden and you can just look at it and say, oh yeah, that's nice. Or you can walk past it and want to know a bit more. Then you can get deeper and deeper and deeper. And just the details will carry on as much as you want to take. You don't have to take all the details, but for instance, our pathway, which is handmade ceramic tiles, because Andrew's also a ceramicist as well as a graphic designer, and he and Sue Ridge have put together the designs on the pathway, and every tile is going to tell a story, that we're actually going to have a little crib sheet that people can look at to see what all the tiles mean, and you know, there's an image of Leslie's actual brain in there. There's an image of Queen's Square Hospital, and just lots and lots of tiny details that you don't have to know all about it, but all that detail is there, and just telling that story, and it's just so exciting.
Is it a little bit of a Sergeant Pepper's album in a sense, Katie? Is that a fair way to describe that?
Yes, that's actually quite good. Yes, and or maybe there's a bit of Where's Wally in it as well, but I mean, when I did the Postcard from Wales garden that won a gold in 2011 with Maggie Hughes, that was another one that had layers, because it was based on Dylan Thomas's house in Larne. And we put in little bits of snippets of story from Undermilk Wood, like the crushed shells between the path gaps. And he had a dog called Mably, and we made this tiny little white wooden cross that was hidden among the plants, which I would imagine 99% of people didn't even know it was there. But it's all adding to the story, because he had that little cross in his garden. He had a fig tree by his door. We put a fig tree in, and it's not important to the whole overall picture, but I love all that depth of story.
So Katie, just pause on the line there for a second. I just want to make a phone call to a good friend of mine.
Hi, Dr. Rudgum.
It's Peter from The Sideshow. How are you?
Hi, Peter. It's Fergus. I'm good, thank you.
Fergus, first of all, for those listening, can you tell me what your full title is and where you work?
Yes, of course. So, Dr. Fergus Rudgum, consultant neurologist at University College London Hospital, National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. And I specialise in epilepsy, look after a large group of patients both at the hospital in London, but also at the Epilepsy Society, where there's been a long tradition really of working closely with the Epilepsy Society and the National Hospital for Neurology in London for over 100 years. And it's this really coming together of research and clinical expertise, really with sort of really patient management at its heart, really trying to improve the situation.
For those who aren't aware, can you tell me what is epilepsy?
Yeah, so epilepsy is really an abnormal electrical activity in the brain. Lots of causes of epilepsy, everything from really something in your genes that can be passed down to the family, all the way through to head injuries or birth trauma. Infections such as meningitis or encephalitis can cause seizures, even certainly things like strokes and brain tumors as we get older can be causes. So anything that disturbs the normal electrical activity of the brain will tend as a symptom to cause an epileptic seizure.
On a worst case scenario, day-to-day basis, how would epilepsy affect a random general person?
Yes, absolutely. So in fact, 1 in 20 of us will have a seizure at some point in our life. So that's, you know, a lot higher than you might have thought. But for most people, it doesn't mean it's recurrent. It's a one-off. And it's when it's recurrent that that then defines epilepsy. Now, sometimes it can be something as simple as a brief blank spell or some jerking movements. But at its worst, which is what you ask really, is that it's probably what's called a convulsive seizure or a generalized tonic-clonic seizure, what used to be called a grand mal seizure, which is sort of the old name for these things. So that's when a patient will collapse, be unconscious, they develop stiffness in their arms and legs, and then jerking movements lasting for maybe a minute or two. And then there'll be a gradual recovery afterwards, where they may be a bit confused and disorientated, very tired. The actual jerking movements themselves, a minute or two, but the recovery really can last anything 30 minutes up to 60 minutes. And during that time, the patient will be really very confused and drowsy, unable to look after themselves, and will really rely on others around them to look after them at this time.
One final question, and I've heard varying stories on this, so no better person to ask. In the case of a seizure, what is the, do I call it, protocol that somebody like myself should take?
Yeah, I think it's a really important question because you never know when you're going to be faced with this situation. So firstly, I think it's important to stay calm. You know, most seizures will stop themselves within a minute or two. It's important to look around to make sure that the person having the seizure isn't going to injure themselves on furniture or something else around them. So move anything away that's nearby that they could injure themselves on. No need to move the patient themselves unless they are in danger. And what's really important is to cushion their head, something soft if they've collapsed to the ground. Don't need to hold them down or support them in other ways. And certainly don't put anything in their mouth. It's always been this tradition. You need to put something in the mouth to stop them swallowing their tongue. It just doesn't happen. It's and actually more likely to injure your own fingers or damage their teeth in their mouth. So that's really important. Useful to check when the seizure started in terms of timing and when it stopped, so you know how long it's going on for, because if the seizure's going on for more than 5 minutes, it really is a time, even with someone who is known to have seizures, it's important to perhaps get an ambulance, then paramedics at that time. Now, clearly, if you've come across someone in the street and they're having a seizure, then, of course, you should call the paramedics every time because you just don't know what's going to happen. But people who have seizures on a regular basis, typically an ambulance doesn't need to be called every time. But certainly if they've injured themselves, if it's lasting longer than normal or certainly over 5 minutes, that'll be a time to call the paramedics. And once the seizure has stopped, placing the patient and the person in the recovery position, really important then just to make sure their airway is looked after, they're breathing okay, and stay with them and just comfort them and stimulate them until they've recovered. And I think that's probably the top 10 tips, if you like.
Fergus, thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.
I've always described the difference between English poetry and Irish poetry in the Irish language, which is another layer added on top, even post it being translated, in that the word translated directly into English actually doesn't in theory mean that, depending on how you use it and in what tense, number one. But number two, the objective is never to get there. It always has to be the meander. It's always the people you meet along the way. It's always the story. It's never as simple as I love you, hence why I always refer to myself as sometimes I may stumble and bumble my way through life outside of work in brackets. But at the same token, it's a far more interesting way of doing things. Do you like it when you get that bit of symbolism, metaphorical, not everybody gets it, understands it, or sometimes even notices it?
Not at all in a pretentious way, though. I think it just lets it be accessed by people at different levels. If they want to stand and talk and investigate the garden for a long time, they can. But they can. I always want to make it so that they can just look at it and get it. I think that's so important. And when you're designing a garden at Chelsea, you've got to design it in different ways. You have got to design it so that a photograph works, it works on television, and it works from the judge's point of view, which is obviously a completely different side altogether. But I think more importantly, that those visitors to the show, and when it's sort of 10 deep in people, somebody at the back might not be able to see it. So, you know, just little details like trying to make it slope upwards a little bit so that everyone can see it. I mean, but you know, that's just another thing that's apart from the story of what the garden's about.
How this interview actually came about, as a, by the way, for those of you listening, was a couple of weeks ago, my phone literally went off the radar, and it was Cormac from Conway Landscapes and Craig from London Stone, and then our good friend from ID Verde jumps in, and all of a sudden it's Sideshow, Katie's doing a garden, and they're all screaming. I say screaming in text format, but screaming nonetheless. You got to do the thing. What's the connection?
Well, I met Cormac originally from doing my past gardens, because he always works with John and Adam, who are previous gold medal winners.
Oh, Walcott and Smith?
Yes.
Yeah, former guest of the show.
Yes, and so I'd become friendly with Cormac and needed a good landscaper. And it is such a small world, because he himself had been visiting hospital at Queen Square, which is part of our whole epilepsy story. Cormac's friend Craig at London Stone, he has a daughter who has epilepsy, so Craig very much wants to be involved.
Whereabouts is the garden positioned, as by the way, Katie?
It's exactly halfway down Serpentine Walk. You know how they started using the mount, the raised bit?
Yeah.
So at the moment now there are five of us along the straight walk, you know, the Serpentine Walk. And then three of them are up on the mound. Actually, I have had two people ask for my autograph.
Really? Really? I don't mean that to laugh at that in that kind of a way, but...
No, it is hilarious. Yeah. I had to sign somebody's RHS handbook, you know, the one you buy, whatever they call that. He said he's trying to collect all the designer's signatures every year. And then someone had to sign our leaflet so that they could take it home. But I suppose, you know, it is a big deal being a Chelsea designer. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we are just all ordinary people.
You can say ordinary people, but you're doing something, in this case, quite extraordinary, I would suggest.
Well, in this case, yeah. I mean, if I can do something to help raise awareness of epilepsy, and, you know, and I do get quite passionate and talk about it a lot.
No, it really is. It's impressive. It's wonderful to see. And to be quite honest with you, I'm delighted. Katie, let me go back slightly. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, originally, I was trained as a graphic designer. And I left straight from college and went to work at the BBC and was there for some time before I was then sort of poached out into Soho, into the post-production industry. But then when I had my son, just felt I couldn't really work in advertising. So we moved out to the country where I'd grown up in Buckinghamshire. And I just decided to sort of change my design direction, instead of graphic design, into garden design. So I trained at Berkshire College of Agriculture and did actually my first two gardens for them. And both of those got a silver gilt, all artisan gardens. And then I did one as a mentor for a 15-year-old boy at Hampton Court, which also got a silver gilt. And following that, teamed up with a good friend of mine, Maggie Hughes, who had previously got a gold at Chelsea as an artisan. But we worked together on Postcard from Wales in 2011, which really was a very lovely garden, even if I do say so myself. And then we did a second one for the Botanic Garden of Wales in 2013. And so this is my fifth Chelsea, but sixth RHS garden. But I do remember hearing Kate Gould saying how she was addicted to doing Chelsea gardens, and I totally understand that. I mean, I just love doing it, and it's painful, but you have to kind of keep doing it because it's such a great experience.
Is that from the interview that I did with her?
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's definitely one of them. That makes me smile a lot. Katie, have you had a lot of people come in and say, we can't give you money, but we can give you this, or we'd like to do X for you?
Yes, well, I mean, some of that's happened just since in the 24 hours that I've been on Twitter. But also people are being very generous with just offering to grow things, even if it's just a tiny little bit in a greenhouse here or a greenhouse there, and people giving discounts for things. I mean, our living wall at the back of the garden is actually being grown by a company called Biotecture in Battle near Hastings, and I think that's just going to look tremendous. And hopefully I can go down and see some progress, but it's supposed to be sort of representing wallpaper. So let's hope that the design that I've put together for the growing of those plants actually does look like wallpaper. That's one of the great terrifying things of growing a garden for a deadline, that it's all got to be perfect on a certain day. Yes, actually another one of the scary things at the moment is that I'm watching the yew hedges grow, and as you trim them back, you think, I hope that's all going to grow back nice and fluffy for the show. Yew is notorious for slow growing. And I think, do I cut that branch off? Will it grow back?
There was a 17th century estate that I'd designed and built, and they had the stereotypical box hedging in between the York stone as you led out onto the pathway at the back of the very grand house. And the daughter was getting married, and 6 weeks beforehand, I remember the box hedging got cut. 12 weeks before that, it got very harshly cut, and one gentleman came up and told me that I should be ashamed of myself. How could I do this to X's daughter? And essentially, it was that moment in time that if temperatures hadn't have kept consistent, I would have been in big trouble. Is there an element of that, the danger, with you?
Oh, absolutely. I think actually 2013, that was a huge issue, because we had an incredibly cold spring. And I was just putting everything in, like everything I could find, like even in clear plastic bags to try and keep the cold off them. And you just don't know whether things are going to grow in time.
Katie, to be quite fair about this, I feel that building and designing a garden at Chelsea, seeing that come to completion, I think almost every person I've interviewed, in fact, has said that it's essentially a privilege. It's a privileged position to be in. How do you see yourself? Do I call it in society, in brackets, subsection, horticulture photosynthetic? And on the flip side of that, are you just that normal person when you're sitting at home? Does that question make sense with you?
Yes, and your everyday life, you know, I'm still a mother, and I still go out and do taekwondo 3 or 4 times a week. But I'm also a garden designer, and then I think, oh, I do Chelsea. Actually, that's pretty good, really, isn't it? But it's just what I do, and I love it.
Katie, sorry, I'm distracted by the taekwondo thing. Stick with me on that one for a second. What belt do you have?
Oh, I'm a third Dan black belt. Yeah. And yeah, so I teach it twice a week and then train 3 or 4 times a week. And I love it. And well, and my husband and my 2 kids do it too. My daughter's a third Dan, and my son and husband are second Dan's.
Wow. 101 amazing Katie Chrome Sideshow facts. We should turn this into a book. I'm going to stand on the far side of the road when I see you at Chelsea 2018, just in case you didn't like your interview.
As you start getting older, you've got to make sure you keep flexible and keep young. Oh, in fact, there are so many jobs I want to do that I feel I need to go back 30 years, and so I've got time to do all the jobs I want to do. I want to be a stonemason. I don't think I can start a new career now.
Why not?
Well, because I also want to carry on being a garden designer. And I want to carry on being a taekwondo instructor. And I'm actually shortly going to start training as a national trampoline judge as well, because my daughter is a national trampoliner. And there's just so many things in life to do.
Do you have little people that run around in your head, Katie?
Oh, yeah. Don't you?
I have too many of them. Yes, absolutely. Of course I do.
I just love being busy. But then I complain about being busy as well. And I'm always late for everything, because I can't bear not doing anything for 5 minutes if I got somewhere early. If I got there 5 minutes early, it's like, well, this 5 minutes is a waste of time. So people know that I am just a late person.
2018, you're at Chelsea. The epilepsy garden is built. How beautiful is it? What's that picture? What's that, Peter, let me hold your hand. We're going to walk off through the fields together, and in the background, with your eyes closed, Hendrix is playing, and we've got the bottle of Middleton very rare in our hand. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, you have the Guinness, I'll have a red wine, please. it's a garden the size of a postage stamp. It's only 5.5 metres by 4, divided into 3. On the left-hand side, calm and green, kind of William Morris era planting, slash a hurricane of brown, crispy, chaotic pain through the middle, which represents the seizure. Post-seizure, something that Leslie always described she got after her seizures, was a kind of bright, newly enlightened brain that was full of ideas and buzzing and perhaps slightly quirky and different. So the other side of the garden is bright and colourful and possibly a little odd, but we'll see that by the time I've built it.
when you were putting this together, Katie, and I guess sometimes when you come across a garden like this, when I spoke to an interview that you referenced with Kate Gold, and in talking about her 2017 and in fact her upcoming 2018 Chelsea garden, did you sit down at the table with the pen in the hand or the pencil in the hand and turn around and go, boom, I got it, it's designed in the space of 3-4 minutes, if you get me on the back of a cigarette pack, to borrow that cliche?
Yeah, the basic idea of having the seizure slashing through the middle, that was there even when I first spoke to Leslie in 2016. But the detail about exactly the positioning and the shape and how the bench would work, that took some thrashing out, really making that work, because this beautiful steam bent oak bench actually becomes part of the seizure. So when the bench hits the brown crispy area, it actually goes into seizure itself, representing a sort of EEG readout. So sort of frantically goes up and down in that area. So all that was quite complicated to work out. But no, I think the basic idea, which is what people will see, they'll see that seizure through the middle. That was there from the beginning.
There's another side to this, Katie, which is taking that concept, that back of the cigarette packet idea, putting it into your photosynthetic design mind, putting that out on paper so that it actually makes some kind of sense to everybody else in order to be built. When it's judged or when the public view it, it sometimes doesn't. And I suppose it's possible maybe to, on one hand, reference maybe the Bassan's garden of 2017 Chelsea, which, although won gold, didn't make sense always to the public or to all of the public, where, on the other hand, there were gardens by Andrew Wilson and Gavin McWilliam, again, former guests of the show, that never won gold, where I didn't entirely understand why, but the public loved it, and albeit they achieved that in 2017. When you put this together and you put it down on paper, did you turn around and say, boom, we've got it, this is what the judges will see, this is what the public will feel, they'll get it straight away? Or are we back to that, no, Peter, it was a Sgt. Pepper's album, it had a multitude of layers, and by about the fifth time you listened to the album and read the back cover inside and out, it then only started to make sense?
Yes, but I think you need to be able to see the garden on all the levels. I think you need to be able to spend 10 seconds looking at it and get it, but you can equally spend half an hour looking at it and just get it a lot more, if you see what I'm saying. And I think it's important for both of those things work.
There's a moment in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the movie, where his best friend is looking at the painting and he almost gets drawn into the texture of it. If you look at Machiavellian-esque art, to me it's just a ye old aged variation of a dad's photography skills, which is get the 8 children together, stand them in a straight line, and we'll frame that and we'll stick it up on the wall. Where I'm probably a little bit more of an Andy Warhol fan, where you almost have to interpret what he's trying to say, and so you daydream in forever and a day looking at that one image.
Yeah, I still think it's really important that you can get the garden by spending 10 seconds in front of it. It can be deeper.
Yeah, but you've got all of the tiles with all of the individual messages on it.
Oh, yeah. So that's the when you get deeper bit. But you don't have to know that to understand it. You can just look at it and think, there's a seizure.
And now we're back to the white cross all of a sudden, hidden in the middle of the back of the other garden.
And there can be endless little things like the, you know, the fact that the oak is probably referencing the oak that would have been used in that arts and crafts period as well. But it doesn't have to be. It can just be an oak bench. That's fine.
Katie's garden will be at Chelsea Flower Show 2018. If you are going there, do go up. Wish her all the very best. It will be built alongside Embroidered Minds and the Epilepsy Society and so many others. And Katie Crome, thank you so very much for coming on the Sideshow. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. For you listening at home, if you're stuck for this, if you're looking for any of the show notes, a photograph of Katie and more information on the garden that she's piecing together, including all of her contact details, Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. Did I say that right? I think I did. In the meantime, have a great weekend in the great outdoors. Katie, how is that for you?
Good. My hand's tired holding this phone, though. I could do it coming around having a pint of Guinness now, though.
Oh, jeepers, stop.